Welcome to the Auto Trader and Kelley Blue Book Sales Day call. My name is Christine, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Michelle Behar, Public Relations Specialist for Cox Automotive. You may begin.
Good morning, and thank you for joining this month's Auto Trader and Kelley Blue Book Sales Day conference call. Alec Gutierrez, Senior Analyst for Kelley Blue Book, will be speaking today on July 2017 results, followed by a Q&A session. Go ahead, Alec.
Thanks, Michelle, and thank you all for joining the call this morning. As we've all seen, industry sales have been coming in this morning for most of the major auto manufacturers, and thus far we expect to see industry sales likely end in the 16.5 to 16.6 million SAR range. In terms of volume, that's going to put us at around 1,420,000 units, give or take a few thousand. In terms of our forecast, numbers are coming in slightly below expectations. Our forecast had called for 1,430,000 units, or about 16.7 million SAR. So, and looking at the big picture numbers, generally in line with expectations, with a handful of automakers coming in slightly below where we had anticipated. From a macro perspective, the fundamentals in the industry are still very, very strong. You look at unemployment, and we're at 4.4%. You've got consumer confidence at a 10 to 15-year high range. Check the conference board this morning. We're sitting at about 121 in terms of their overall index. Fuel prices remain very affordable across the country, which is why when you look at most of the major automakers, we've got very, very strong performances in the truck and SUV segments. In fact, mix continues to shift towards trucks and SUVs, with the vast majority of manufacturers now putting a greater emphasis on ensuring they have the right mix of sport utilities and crossovers and trucks on their lots. In terms of transaction prices, we saw the average new car sell for about $34,700 in July, about a 1.7% year-over-year increase. Compare that to incentive spend, which was averaging a little bit above $3,600 per unit, which is about a 5% year-over-year increase. In comparing incentives to transaction prices, we're still above 10% in terms of that ratio, which again is a measure of industry health, industry discipline, and thus far we do continue to see incentives rising at a greater clip than overall transaction prices. However, it's fair to point out that if you're to break it down by segment, you are seeing most of that growth come in slower selling segments, mid-sized cars, small cars, for example. While trucks and SUVs still enjoy generous incentives, the growth hasn't been as pronounced as we've seen in others. In terms of leasing, the industry is still sitting at around 30 to 31% overall in terms of the lease penetration rate. However, it is fair to point out that we have seen a slight cooling, a slight slowing down of lease activity, although we are still seeing longer-term loans take a foothold in the industry, which again speaks to the fact that while overall economic fundamentals are very, very strong and support a healthy sales environment overall, from an affordability standpoint, the average new car buyer is having to stretch a little bit further than in years past, hence why you're seeing, again, leasing remain about a third of all industry sales, and you are seeing those longer-term roads. Those longer-term loans continue to expand. Finally, looking at the used car market, despite rising off-lease inventory, used car values at auction remain relatively strong. If you look at where the segment was, or where the industry was last year, used car values for late model inventory, those 1 to 3 year old cars, typical off-lease volume, are roughly flat. So despite rising off-lease inventory, despite our expectation for softness in the wholesale marketplace, at this stage at least, the upmarket the upstream channels available to the manufacturers, to the dealers, to efficiently dispose of off-lease inventory seem to be doing a good enough job to at least keep values in check, hence why residuals, while down slightly on a year-over-year basis, remain relatively strong from a historic perspective. That's why, again, leasing remains an attractive option for most. You still have low interest rates, you've got strong residual performance, and thus far, at least from a wholesale perspective, values are looking relatively strong. Finally, just a few notes on some of the major manufacturers that have reported. Most notably in terms of those that showed a decline this month, GM was down 15%. We had anticipated overall sales of about 243,000 units. Final performance came in at 226,000. We can attribute most of their underperformance to a significant reduction in sales into rental car. GM fleet sales came in below expectations. In fact, I think their overall rental penetration only came in at about 1% of overall sales, thanks to an 80% decline into that segment. While rental sales declined, their overall fleet performance wasn't all down. There was an increase in commercial fleet sales for some of their vans and other products. So while GM has cut on the rental side, they are still pushing sales into fleet like most manufacturers. However, typically, commercial fleet sales tend to be a bit more profitable than high-volume sales into rental. So from a balance sheet perspective, it's a healthier practice than traditional sales into rental. Ford was down 7.5%, similar to GM. They have continued to cut fleet sales overall there. We saw a decline of about 26%. F-Series posted a particularly strong performance with sales up about 5.8%, which is almost, which really amounted to close to 70,000 trucks. So again, not just at Ford, but more from a an overall industry perspective. Again, sales of trucks, sales of SUVs continue to remain very, very strong. However, similar to the rest of the industry, midsize sales were off, where Ford saw Fusion sales decline 42%. Again, partly attributed to the decline in fleet sales, but mostly, or also in large part influenced just by the overall decline in interest in midsize sedans and smaller sedans overall. Finally, the last surprise I'll point out before we open it up to questions was Toyota, who actually posted a 3.6% increase. Noteworthy especially because, one, all other manufacturers, at least that we've seen report thus far, posted a decline. But secondly, also with one fewer selling day in July of 2017 versus last year, it's especially noteworthy for Toyota. And worth pointing out was the Toyota RAV4, which again is in one of the strongest segments in the industry from a market share perspective, now the strongest segment in the industry, but that compact CUV segment remains top of mind for consumers, one of the bright spots in the industry to date, and that's where RAV4 really had its best month ever with north of 40,000 units sold overall. And with that, I will open it up to questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. So once again, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your phone now. And our first question is from Nathan Bomey of USA Today. Please go ahead.
Hi, Alec. You just mentioned Toyota. That's what I wanted to ask about. Did they have they pivoted at all in terms of incentive strategy or anything like that? Like, why did they buck the trend this month?
I think with Toyota, I think they were just in a good position in terms of having enough units on the ground for RAV4, while their overall supply hasn't quite been there to meet demand. I think they have moved up a little bit of in terms of incentives. In particular, the RAV4, though, I don't think there's a lot of spend there. There aren't large cash incentives on RAV4. There's a little bit of lease support. But overall, I think it was just about having the right inventory on the ground, having the right mix at their dealerships, and having a competitive offering of incentives for shoppers. But when you look at Toyota compared to the overall industry in terms of incentive spend, they tend to be one of the more conservative automakers overall. Let me see if I can find a comparison. Just give me one moment here. Yeah, if you look at, again, I pointed earlier to the incentive spend to transaction price ratio. Again, it's a good measure to kind of compare automakers in terms of discipline, in terms of overall performance. Again, if you look at that industry number, non-luxury brands tend to average about 10.4%, right? So about a little more than 10 cents on the dollar for every unit sold goes towards incentives. Toyota sits at about 7.6%. The only brands that are more conservative in terms of incentive spend than Toyota on the non-luxury front are Honda, which sits at 6.3%, and Subaru, which is at 3.4%. So, again, I think for Toyota, it was mostly about having enough of the right product on the ground to meet demand, because in terms of incentives, while they've maybe creeped up a little bit, they're still amongst the most conservative in the industry.
Okay, and then I also wanted to ask about Honda, too. I noticed that their car sales are up, and crossover SUV pickups down. What is Honda doing with cars that nobody else can figure out?
Yeah, that's certainly an interesting one, and I think what it speaks to is that while, you know, we talk a lot about the fact that midsize, the demand for midsize sedans, for compact sedans, just isn't what it once was. That a lot of that demand has shifted over SUVs. There is still a segment of the population. There is still a need for midsize sedans or for compact sedans. That's a need that's going to be there, and it's not going to go away. There will be a floor. There will be some share of the market of sales that will always go to those segments. With that in mind, only the cream of the crop really kind of rise to the top. If there's limited demand in those segments, they're going to gravitate towards the top-tier players, and Honda just happens to own really their top three, basically, in the midsize segment with Accord, with Civic in the compact sedan segment, and even with Fit in the subcompact segment. If there's going to be any sales in those segments, Honda's going to do well there, Toyota's going to do well there. It's kind of your second-tier players, like Ford with their Fusion, GM with Malibu, they're going to have to really take a hard look at their strategy in those segments. They're going to have to decide how competitive they want to be, because from a product perspective, their cars are just as good as what Toyota and Honda have to offer. The perception isn't there, and thus they have to support far more heavily with incentives and with advertising to try and remain competitive. So, unless you're Honda or Toyota, it's going to be a tough fight to maintain share in those segments.
Got it. Yeah. Good. Thank you.
Yep. You got it, Nathan. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question is from Rye Drewson of San Antonio Express News. Please go ahead.
Yep. Hi, Alec. Thanks so much for taking time to talk to us about this. I focus on the trucks mostly, and I found it interesting looking at the full-size truck numbers. And I think you kind of touched on it, but I'd like to just clarify. You know, GM's full-size trucks were down. Fiat Chrysler, the Ram was flat. And, I mean, you talked about how the F-Series was up, and I also looked the Tundra, and I know the Titan is a small portion, but both of those were up. I'm wondering, are you attributing that to the fleet discussion, rental discussion you were talking about before, or do you attribute the fall for GM and the flatness for Fiat Chrysler to something else?
No, I mean, I think when you have a segment that's performed as well as the truck segment, you're just going to have a little bit of ebb and flow. You know, I think there is something to be said for the reduction of sales into rental with respect to GM sales. I don't think there's a ton of Silverados that are going into rental, but there are a handful of units certainly that go every month. Same thing with Ram. And they've been focusing on a similar strategy to maybe not cut as aggressively as Ford and GM, but to at least not to push too aggressively into rental sales. So I think Some of the reduction in the fleet has contributed to the loss in sales there, but when you're pushing, like Silverado does, you know, 50, 60,000 units a month, and you're looking at a very, very strong comp in July of 2016, it's no surprise that you're going to see a slight reduction there. It's more of a surprise, actually, I think, that Ford came over and above the others and saw the increase that they did, given the environment that we're in, where we're at one of the strongest truck markets that we've really ever seen in the industry. So I think there's some, again, just to sum it up, I think there's some influence from the reduction in fleet sales, but overall I think you're just looking at a segment that is at its peak. So you're going to see, you'll see some down months, you'll see some up months, but there isn't a lot outside of that. We haven't seen a dramatic uptick in incentives, for example, in those segments. Incentive spend has been relatively steady there. So that's how I characterize it.
Okay. And then just to follow up, you know, from the midsize perspective, Tacomas are up. It looks like the Colorado and the Canyon had kind of mixed results for GM. But, you know, from Toyota's perspective, they've announced a lot of investments over the last year, and one of them was a $150 million investment into the Baja California Tacoma plant in order to ramp up production, because they basically said that they've been outstripped by demand. I'm wondering, from your perspective, do you think we're seeing any results from that right now, given that Tacomas are rising, their sales are rising now year over year? And do you think that that's going to allow Toyota to better compete with Ford when they come out with the Ranger sometime next year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Tacoma has been a truck that has historically always been challenged from a supply perspective. I think that's part of the reason why you see Tacoma historically being, amongst all vehicles in the marketplace, one of the best performers from a residual value perspective. I mean, there are hardly any cars or trucks that can compete with Tacoma in terms of its ability to maintain its value over time, and a lot of that is due to the fact that there's always more demand than there is supply. So I think with the plant in Baja kind of ramping up, pushing out additional inventory to be made available for retail consumers, I think that has helped to contribute to their ability to push sales up, especially, again, considering the fact that there was, you know, one fewer selling day this year compared to last. I think there is an impact there. And it's especially impressive when you consider the fact that Colorado and Canyon are very, very competitive products that are obviously resonating reasonably well with consumers. They've carved out a niche for themselves, and yet here's Tacoma still able to maintain its share and push forward. And I think it will be important for them to continue to focus on having the right mix of trucks on their lots, especially with Ranger coming back in the near to midterm. But ultimately, in terms of mid-size players in the truck segment, Tacoma is still by far and away the one to beat.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yep, you got it.
Thank you. Our next question is from Megan Lampinen of Automotive World. Please go ahead.
Thanks. I was interested in hearing any thoughts about Ford's patent challenge for the Lincoln Co. brand and the argument that it's too close to its own Lincoln brand. I mean, is there really any risk of, you know, the danger of brand confusion in this case?
That's an interesting one. I was just reading a little bit about that this morning. I don't know, at least from my perspective, that there's a tremendous amount of risk in terms of folks getting confused between the Lincoln brand and the Link and Co. Brand or company. I mean, Lincoln's a brand that's been around for, I think, north of 100 years, certainly well-recognized to the average consumer. Again, it's a little outside of my personal area expertise in terms of brand recognition and or confusion based on similarity in name and nomenclature. But from my personal perspective, I don't know that there's a tremendous degree of risk of folks actually getting confused. Again, unless you look at the logos and maybe they're a little too close for comfort. But again, I don't see a tremendous amount of risk, but I'm not an expert in this particular area.
Okay. Are there any lessons that we can look to in the past about two brands that have been pretty similar, either in, you know, the way they sound, or their logos? Anything we can look to get an idea of how this might impact performance?
It's hard to say. The only other example that I've got off the top of my head is that I know that there's been discussions in the past with I think the Chinese brand Chery versus Chevrolet and kind of their shorthand Chevy. I don't know that there was ever any real impact to the Chevrolet brand. Obviously, they continue to be a top performing brand here in the U.S. Certainly, recognized as a premier producer of utilities and trucks. So that's the only one I can think of offhand in the automotive sector. Not much else outside of automotive that's top of mind. So hopefully that helps. I don't know that I have any other example off the top of my head.
That's fine. Thanks a lot.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. And our next question is from Dean Durbin of Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hi, Alec. Thanks for taking the call. I noticed in the release you said sales could see an uptick in August or September because model year closeouts and Labor Day sales. I'm wondering if, are we still expecting that? And just sort of generally, what are you kind of thinking for the rest of the year, particularly in terms of incentive activities for people who might be looking to buy? Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely, Dee. I'm happy to speak to that. Yeah, I think when we look at expectations in August and September, it's less that we're going to see an uptick on a year-over-year basis and more really speaking to the fact, or more speaking to the seasonal trend in the sense that, you know, we tend to see the market start the year off slowly. You see a jump up in March. You'd see another push in May due to Memorial Day, and then sales tend to come down and cool off in June and July. And then with Labor Day in September, you do tend to see increased incentive activity. You do tend to see an increase in the availability of new model year inventory and thus previous model year closeout sales. So I think from a seasonal perspective, compared to where we're at today, the sales totals that we saw in June and what we're seeing in July, we're going to see greater volume in August and September from a month-over-month perspective. Compared to the comps last year, though, we'll probably still end up underneath trend. We'll probably still be down on a year-over-year basis,
okay.
Likely not to a significant degree. But, I think it will be new models. There will be an increase in incentives to a slight degree. I wouldn't expect to see more than maybe $100, $200 a unit. That might even be on the high side, if I'm honest about it. And in terms of how that will translate to our overall estimate for the year, I think today we still sit at 17.1 million units overall. Obviously, this month came in slightly below expectations, but not enough really to cause us to question that annual estimate, at least just yet. So we'll be keeping an eye on the activity in August and September to see how consumers react and kind of reassess at that point. But for the moment, we're still sitting at 17.1.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, you got it, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you. I will now turn the call back over to Michelle Behar for closing remarks.
Great. Keep an eye out for next month's call-in details. If you need anything else, please feel free to reach out to the public relations team and we'll be happy to help. Thank you all for joining and have a great day.
Thank you. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.